Hello, welcome to episode number 10 of the Punching Pod podcast. As ever, it's me, Sam Brady, and Oscar. I'm absolutely buzzing for this one, mate. I can't wait to actually get stuck into the upcoming fights this weekend and the fights just gone. How are you for a start, mate?
I'm all good, mate. As I say, looking forward to this episode. And sounds like there's a lot to talk about in the world of MMA. So I feel like we're going to predominantly be touched on that. But then obviously, a bit of news has emerged in boxing. Of course, in Saudi Arabia. I mean, no surprises there anymore, is it? So we'll lead on to that at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah, as I said, I'm buzzing for this card. It's weird because I was watching a lot of sort of promo videos and fight week interviews from the, of course, Sean Strickland versus Dricus du Plessis that we've got this Saturday last night. And I thought, do you know what? I knew it was an interesting fight, but it's actually a more intriguing fight than I thought. And I'm actually more, as the weeks have progressed, I've got more and more excited for the fight. I don't know. That I don't know if that happens to you a lot of the times where originally I feel like, as we might have said in previous podcasts, a lot of people sort of scratch their head and it's an interesting fight, but it's one of those fights where it's a real pick 'em fight where you really don't know which way it's going to swing. So as you said, yeah, this episode will predominantly focus on the UFC card on Saturday, and then we'll touch on, as you said, some boxing news. But we'll get stuck into it. Oscar, you've seen some bits of John Strickland and some bits of Dricus du Plessis. How do you see this fight and this night going?
Yeah, obviously you mentioned the build up, and that's been electric. That's something that a lot of people have gotten excited about. But I think based off their last two performances, on paper, you'd have to favour Sean Strickland. But I'm like, that seems to be what most people are saying, because obviously he beat Israel Adesanya, who's a better opponent than Robert Whittaker. But I would actually go the other way, purely off the basis, and I'm sure you can kind of give a more nuanced opinion on this because you've done your homework in terms of like both fighters and what they're bringing to the table. But from my perspective, I've just, like, looking at those clips of du Plessis and Sean Strickland side by side when they're on the scales, it's ridiculous how much bigger of a athlete du Plessis is. I mean, I think you sent me one of the clips where, and it's so unusual to see two weight-making fighters look completely different just as they're weighing in on the scales. Normally, it's a case of one athlete rehydrates to such an extent that they're physically so much bigger than night. But for him to be that much bigger than Strickland on the day of a weigh-in, it's already given him such an advantage from my perspective. And obviously, like, going back to that performance against Whittaker, I feel like that was the case in that fight. He just used all of his physical advantages to his advantage, basically. And I think he can do something quite similar against Strickland, who, let's be honest, he's a born fighter. I mean, he's tough as anything. And he's got really just sound fundamentals. Like, if he was to teach someone how to compete in the UFC, obviously I'm not qualified to do that. But I would say someone like a Sean Strickland, in terms of him grasping the fundamentals of MMA, he's an example of someone who has been able to achieve that. But the one thing he doesn't offer is that X factor. He doesn't have the knockout power to completely trouble du Plessis at any point. And he doesn't have the awkwardness of someone like an Adesanya to make it a hard fight in that sense for du Plessis. So I think for those reasons, I actually, as I say, favour du Plessis. Mainly because of those physical advantages, really.
Yeah, it's the fact that I was watching interviews yesterday and throughout fight week, and I just wanted to sort of give this despite the credit it deserves, really, because I think a lot of people are sort of maybe underestimating how good of a fight this will actually be. And you touch on the size, but I don't just think it's the size, it's everything that these Strickland and Du Plessis are so contrasting opposites in. You've got, I mean, as you touched on, the size is a big factor. Du Plessis is such a unit. He's a giant for that division. He's so athletic. He's so strong. And that's what the danger is from what he can offer in terms of his power. He's just this mowing machine that's mowed through that middleweight division, stopping the likes of Darren Till via submission, which people forget. He's got an amazing ground game, an amazing submission game. He's won a lot of belts outside the UFC, with his ground game, but then also stopping Darren Till, but then doing what he did to Whittaker, stopping him the way he stopped Whittaker. And I think, okay, wherever Whittaker is in his career at the minute, you saw as soon as he felt Dracus's power, he didn't want anything to do with that. And I think that is what we can see from Dracus du Plessis. Whereas contrasting in that, you've got Sean Strickland, as you said, not as athletically advantaged as a Dracus du Plessis, but so technically gifted, so good on with his hands, just a little 1-2, like against Izzy, just the fundamentals he did so well. And I think that's where the intrigue comes of how stylistically this matchup is so just contrasting in the two different fighters. And another thing I wanted to touch on as well, not just stylistically and technically, the mindsets of these two fighters. When I tell you, I've never seen in Sean Strickland a champion so unbothered that he's champion than Sean Strickland gives off. He just doesn't care. He just really does not care that he's the champion. He doesn't care for the belt. He doesn't care. He just is literally, as you said, he's a born fighter. He just goes in there and he fights whoever he wants to fight. And if he's champion, that's just an added bonus the way he sees it. Whereas Dracus du Plessis, this is his moment he's dreamed of. So it's the fact that you've got Dracus du Plessis over here, dreaming of being champion, training his whole life to be champion up to this very moment. And he even said in the UFC's promotion video that his life stops Saturday night. He doesn't look past Saturday night. He doesn't look before Saturday night. His life is built up to this fight. Whereas Sean Strickland is just like, yeah, I'm champion. It doesn't really matter. Whatever. I don't really care. Probably going into this fight, as you said, with the betting odds will probably be in favor of Sean Strickland just because of his performance against Israel Adesanya. And that was my view in these past couple of weeks. But I just, and maybe you have a view on this as well, but I just don't like it when a fighter goes into a fight sort of not caring. Well, I'm sure he cares about winning or losing, but he's sort of saying about how, like, oh, we all lose at one point and whatever will happen. And I don't really care about being champion. When especially the other guy is so motivated to become champion. Actually, for the other guy, Du Plessis, it's sort of the whole, like, his whole MMA career is about the belt and is about being champion, whereas Strickland doesn't care. And maybe it helps him going into fights not caring about being champion, and maybe it takes off that added pressure. But for me, I'm starting to lean more in Dracus's favor because I've also seen what he can do. And Sean, I'm sure Sean isn't taking him lightly, but also that mentality just doesn't give me the right vibe. I don't know what your maybe opinions
Yeah,
are on sort of that.
it's an interesting point to bring up actually. But what I will say is, with someone like a Sean Strickland or even any fighter in combat sports, you kind of have to take what they say with a bit of a pinch of salt, because behind closed doors, he could be portraying a completely different mindset. Like this approach that he's showing in front of camera. I would say that there's probably some truth to it in terms of him not necessarily caring about the belts, but in terms of him not caring if he wins and loses. Like, of course, he wants to win. I would actually compare it to someone like a Tyson Fury in boxing, where you see his attitude and his approach before fights, where he's very relaxed, he's very sort of unbothered about it all, and that kind of works in his favor, really. That takes away some of the pressure that would otherwise be there if he was to say, like, oh, I must win this fight, like, my career is over if I don't win this fight. So different fighters do what works for them. Like, there's no sort of one size fits all in terms of, like, your approach to a fight. And clearly with Strickland, he's found that this approach is what works.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Like, of course he wants to win. Like, he will just want to win. But the fact that, and the thing is, you say it's sort of maybe he's behind closed doors and in his camp, he's more determined and motivated that he's portraying. But actually, I genuinely believe he doesn't care about the belt. He doesn't care for being champion. And whether that's because of what he's been through in his life, his trauma, and he actually just sees the belts as these materialistic sort of things, which it is, I genuinely think that is his mindset about being champion. I think against Izzy, he just put up a great performance, and for him, it was an added bonus that he got to fought for the belt and that he won. Whereas I think for Dracus, and this is why I'm sort of thinking, all right, it might help Sean going into a fight like this, and maybe fighters do sometimes get too caught up in I'm the champion, I have the belt. Like, look at fighters like Colby Covington, who held around the interim belt for years, which meant nothing. Some fighters take it to another level, and some fighters are the complete opposite, like Sean, where they actually don't care, and some fighters really do care. But the only problem I have with Sean's mindset is, what does that mindset look like when you come up against a guy who everything he's trained for his whole life is for what you have, is for the belt? So, and look, as I said, it's a pick 'em fight. I was probably 60% Sean, 40% Dracus, but now I'm probably 60% Dracus and 40% Sean. But hey, that's the more I've looked at videos and interviews, the more I've shifted.
Sometimes you can get too caught up by it. Like, sometimes what you see in these press conferences and behind the scenes footage, that can really sway your mind.
Yeah.
It's amazing, really.
But I also do think some fights are just like this, where there's not a clear betting favourite. I do think a lot of the times we go into fights and this is the great example of, I genuinely, come fight night, if you asked me who I'm backing, mate, it'll probably go down to 50-50, to be honest.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's probably one of them ones that's about as 50-50 as you can get. And it's going to be fine margins, like what you're saying about mindset and who wants it more. Sometimes that is what it comes down to.
But I've never, in all my years of watching UFC, seen a fighter like Strickland who really, as I said, just doesn't care. And just, like, he's so nonchalant about, oh, they ask him, oh, so what about you being champion and what about the belt? Surely it means this, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, nah, like, fuck it, man. I just go in and I just fight and I blah, blah, blah. And
I was going to say, just on that, it's interesting to compare it to athletes even in other sports. Like, you see, for example, with Ronnie O'Sullivan in snooker, he does not give a single fuck about the titles he wins. And I genuinely believe it as well. When he says it, he's got to that point in his career where he just could not care less.
Yeah.
And some athletes are a bit like that. Like, I don't know why. I think with his case, probably because of the amount that he's won. But then with
Strickland's case, just on Strickland, I think in his case, actually, MMA has saved him more than caring about being a champion. If it, without MMA and without him stepping into a gym, even by his own admission, he would probably be in prison or be arrested. So for him, actually, MMA's already saved his life. Yeah, it's cool having a bit of extra cash and being a bit more famous. And this is what I just wanted to touch on a little bit as well, sort of going away from sort of the aftermath of Sean Strickland, whether he wins or loses. I mentioned it to you a bit earlier, but look, I'm sure Strickland has a lot of good people around him who are looking after him, and a great team and a great gym. And in the gym and in a fight is where it is his true self. But I am concerned that he's not mentally stable, and he is mentally ill. He has gone through a lot of trauma, which would make anyone mentally unstable. And the way he speaks about wanting to stab Du Plessis, if he mentions anything about his background again, wanting to, if he wasn't fighting, he has a desire to kill someone, and the way he talks about his trauma, clearly this guy is mentally unstable. And look, like, the way he fights, and I love Sean, and he's the most relatable guy, and he's the most humble guy, and he's the most down-to-earth fighter you'll ever meet. But I am worried that we're getting to a point where we're pushing and pushing and pushing him into this spotlight, where actually I hope Dana and Hunter in the UFC are just having a word with him and just going, look, Sean, are you okay? Do you need a bit of time away from the media, or do you need this? And just trying to help him as much as possible, because he is clearly a fighter that it isn't a character. And I know a lot of people are going, oh, it's just Sean, it's just the way he speaks. He's a Brit. He's a bit brash in his nature. I don't think that's the case with Sean. I think that's the case with the likes of Colby Covington. Well, Covington's a prime example of, they chat all this game and they chat all this in the press conferences, but then when they go into a fight, you can see, okay, you're not really that guy. You go in there and okay, you're clearly playing a character. But with Strickland, there's none of that. There's no tells to say, okay, maybe he is just saying all this outlandish shit just to, like, kind of gain fans. I genuinely think he believes everything he says. And that, for me, is sort of the worrying, and makes me sort of uncomfortable in the fact that, as I said, I love Sean. He's one of my favorite fighters. But I just hope after this fight, win, lose, draw, that he does, we over time we see him get a little bit more settled and a little bit more comfortable in the fact that he's a fighter, and this is who he is. Because I think even Sean would admit, if you asked him, he's still getting used to the thing of, now he's Sean Strickland, the UFC champion, where before he was a UFC fighter, but hey, he was just getting in there with whoever UFC, like, told him to fight. And as he said, win, lose, or draw, I feel like he would just go in there and get cash, and that's his job. Whereas now, and because he's more in the spotlight, we're looking at him going, okay, this guy is seriously fucked up. And, like, that is because of his trauma, and that is because of his background. But let's try and help him as much as he can. And if he can still remain champion and get the help he deserves, then that's what we should be encouraging. But as you said, it puts the UFC in a difficult position because of the build-up we've had with Dricus du Plessis, where a fighter takes advantage of maybe Sean's mentally unstable mindset, and we see a storyline occur like the one with Dricus and Sean at the minute. And whether, and this is the thing that I'm saying, is if Sean does go on and beat Dricus, will we see fighters take the same approach as Dricus, one after another, and attack Sean's sort of trauma growing up? And I don't believe we will see all fighters do that, but I believe we'll see some fighters do that, because it plays on the mental game. But should we be advocating that sort of behavior, especially with a guy, if you're targeting a guy like Sean Strickland, who is genuinely mentally unstable anyway? So for me, I just wanted to highlight that point. And look, Sean will get, I'm sure, as I said, he has great people around him. He's a magnificent fighter. So if that helps him in a fight, going into a fight like that, then who are we to say he shouldn't have that mindset? But it's almost the fact that I love Sean so much, I don't want him to see him get hurt. But we had just to touch a bit more on the UFC, we had a few more fights today announced for the infamous UFC 300, the card on April 13th. We had Jim Miller. He's just come off a great performance. And now he called out, he said, oh, yeah, I'd be happy to fight UFC 300. I don't know if you know, Oscar, but Jim Miller's actually fought at UFC 100 and 200. So fans were saying, come on, let's put him on the UFC 300 card. And he fought last week, Jim Miller, and got a great submission win. Didn't seem to take a lot of damage. So he called out a few names. Paul Felder was up there, but they've put him in against Bobby Green, which in itself is a very fun matchup. Bobby Green, he always comes to bang. And yeah, Jim Miller, Bobby Green. Again, a fun matchup that you could put on the
I was
prelim.
going to say quickly, if he's been at UFC 100 and 200, how old is this geezer?
Oh, yeah. He's a veteran. He's
Yeah.
40. Yeah, I know he's in his 40s. I believe he's 42. I don't want to.
Right.
Sorry, Jim, if you're listening, if you're younger than that, I didn't mean to offend. But I know he's definitely in his 40s, I believe. So this, like, who knows? This could be a retirement fight, last little UFC 300 send off for an absolute legend in Jim Miller. He's got the most fights in UFC history ever, surpassing Donald Cerrone. So he is a true, true legend. So to put him in there against Bobby Green on paper, bit of a tough fight for him against Bobby Green, but a fun matchup. And hey, Jim Miller's not here for a long time. He's here for a good time. So hey, whack him. Great fight against Bobby Green. But the fight that is getting fans most excited is Justin Gaethje versus Max Holloway for the BMF title. Now, boy, what a fight that is. Whew, that tell you, Oscar, that is gonna be something else. That is gonna be an absolute banging fight. We had Justin Gaethje and Dustin Poirier fight last time out for the BMF, which was on paper an absolute belter of a fight, which ended up actually Justin Gaethje just with a magnificent head kick against Dustin Poirier. I believe Max is going up a division to lightweight. Of course, he just came off against a great win against Korean Zombie. Yeah, amazing fight that is. And again, that's another pick'em fight where two absolute studs, two absolute warriors. And credit to Gaethje, by the way. Islam said that Gaethje would get the next title fight at lightweight, I think in June, July time. But do you know what? Gaethje went, fuck that. I'm going to fight UFC 300 as well if I get the opportunity. And I might take some damage in the fight, but I'm a fighter. And that sums up Justin Gaethje in a nutshell. He doesn't shy from any fight and he's in there and he's going to stand and bang with one of the best stand and bangers we've ever had in the UFC in Max Holloway. So yeah, another great fight in that one. I'm still looking at that card going, I want a headline. I want a massive headline to a title fight to really get me invested in sort of the storyline. Because the thing is with Gaethje Holloway, don't get me wrong, an amazing fight, a fun fight, but it's sort of like, okay, but what after? What next? Like, you know what I mean? There's many possibilities, but I'm still waiting for the UFC 300 main event title fight to go, yes, there we go. That is what it is. And maybe they are gonna make Gaethje Holloway the main event. And they've already announced that the co-main, I believe the co-main will be the title fight between Weili and Yan. But for me personally, I'm still waiting for that big fight to be like boom, solidified main event. And then we've got Weili Yan, then we've got Gaethje Holloway, then we've got Jim Miller, then we've got Bo Nickel. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of then you can sort of look at that card and go, okay, we have a proper main event now.
I was gonna say, you know what the answer is, don't you?
Go on.
Take it over to Saudi Arabia and get Turkey Al-Ahik involved. Al-Shahik, is it, involved?
Yeah.
He's the one with all the money, mate.
Well, you mentioned that. There was actually rumors of the boxing sort of we'll touch on it in a minute, but Adrian and Ngannou are gonna fight March time, and then Alexander Usyk. When do you think the plan is for Alexander Usyk Fury rematch in Saudi?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, one would think that there is a rematch clause. I'm pretty sure there probably is.
There is, yeah.
Yeah, so,
June, July time.
yeah, it would have to be. It would
So
have to be.
the rumor was that His Excellency will have that Alexander Usyk and Fury the rematch around July time, and also he will have a UFC card in Saudi with Islam Makhachev. Big Muslim community out there, and he has a lot of fans out there, Islam Makhachev. So the plan was to maybe it's rumored to actually have Islam Makhachev fight in July and build a card around him as well.
That'd be really interesting.
And this is why they've put Gaethje on the April card. So then if Gaethje comes through Holloway, they gives him a little bit of leeway to then fight again in July. He has what 2 3 months to go basically straight into another camp, so that's the rumor. We'll see. The UFC are going to go, we do know they are going to go to Saudi this year. They also announced, interestingly, this week they're going to go to India. I don't know if it's going to be this year, but the first ever India card is coming. Of course, this fight on the weekend's in Canada, so yeah. The UFC are looking to globally expand in 2024. We'll move over to the boxing. Oscar, we touched on it last episode. The announcement of Francis Ngannou, who will take on Anthony Joshua in March. And we had the press conference this week. And we had, it sort of went as I think we sort of expected, both being polite to each other, both giving the respect that each other's sort of warranted, and both of them not looking past their opponents. What did you make of it? And sort of also His Excellency with this, you sort of let His Excellency go on and on about all of his ambitions, but he said he wanted a little match up between Match Room and Queensbury fighters as well. So what'd you make of it?
Yeah, well, they are already sort of doing that. I mean, there's talks about Joe Cordina defending his World Super Featherweight title against Anthony Kakache, who's a Queensbury fighter. So they're kind of slipping in these little Match Room versus Queensbury fights in the cards already. I don't know if it's like, if there needs to be a Matchroom v Queensbury card. I mean, we've kind of been talking about it for years, and the fights that we're considering now for it aren't as good as what they were sort of 4 or 5 years ago, where when, for example, Joshua Buatsu was with Matchroom, everyone was clamouring for Joshua Buatsu v Anthony Yard. But now it's Callum Smith v Anthony Yard. And of course, Callum Smith's coming off that knockout defeat to Artur Beterbiev. So I don't know if it's got that same sort of intrigue that it might have done, but obviously part of the benefit of these fights going out to Saudi Arabia, you have to admit, is the fact that you are seeing the two biggest promoters in the UK working with each other. And obviously, like, going back to the press conference with Joshua and Ngannou, I mean, first of all, seeing Frank Warren and Eddie Hearn on the same table is just nuts in itself. Like, that's just mental. But also, the amount of respect that those two have for each other is quite significant in itself. I mean, Anthony Joshua, like, I don't know if you follow Adeola Depo, but he's a sort of boxer. He's a presenter for DAZN, but he also does boxing opinion pieces aside from that. And he did the face-to-face between Anthony Joshua and Ngannou, and that's been recorded now. And he said that Joshua even said to him after, oh, I wasn't expecting him to be that big. So already you kind of seen these signs in Joshua's mindset, these little chinks where he might be thinking to himself, maybe this isn't as easy of an assignment as I initially thought it was. Because when you come face to face with your opponent, I mean, it's so difficult to put that to one side, the size factor. And this will be the biggest fighter Joshua has ever faced. I mean, he's fought the likes of Vladimir Klitschko, who was sort of similar build, similar size. And then he fought more recently Robert Hellenius, who was big, but more sort of body fat as opposed to muscle mass. This guy, Francis Ngannou, is just, in terms of muscle mass alone, he's absolutely ginormous. And I think that's something that might play on Joshua's mind, to be fair.
Yeah, this is what I've been looking at since our last episode, really, when we gave our initial thoughts on the fight. And the thing is, look, don't get it twisted. On a boxing level, Anthony Joshua should be comfortable and should take care of Francis pretty comfortably. And we should, considering how active Anthony Joshua has been, we should be seeing now the prime Anthony Joshua, the best Anthony Joshua. And a lot of people said that after the Wallen fight. But I do feel like this will be a tough, tough test for Anthony Joshua. Not even, I mean, on every level, really. I think on a boxing level, because of the just unknown entity of Francis Ngannou, and sort of he can only get better since his last fight to Tyson Fury. So I still, yes, there's a blueprint out there, like a lot of journalists have said, but I also don't think there's not too much of a blueprint. So I do think that will be a factor. And I just, as you said, the size. Anthony Joshua has never fought anyone like Francis Ngannou. He's a game fighter. He goes in there just to throw bombs and to just land that one punch that all he needs. And I think you get to see from a lot of fighters who you can tell when they get into the ring, they've kind of just taken the money and they're kind of just in it for like kind of a non-serious way, where whether that be the like a Tommy Fury, that they're not at the level that they thought they were, so they've got to take the money grab, or it's just an MMA fighter crossing over to boxing to fight a boxer, and it's a money grab in that sense. But this fight, don't get it twisted, he's getting paid loads, but he genuinely believes, and I think he's proven in the UFC that he is a danger. He is trouble for Anthony Joshua and trouble for a lot of these heavyweights. I still think Anthony Joshua will win, but I do not think it will be a comfortable night for Anthony Joshua. I think he'll get in there and it'll be a good technical display from Anthony Joshua, which it should be. But I think throughout the fight, Ngannou will cause Anthony Joshua challenges that he will overcome. It will not be straightforward. For people who think this will be a straightforward, jobs done, easy fight for AJ, are really in for a surprise. And I think we talked about it last week, and I think a lot of the talk was about how AJ should make it look easy. But actually, I think Ngannou will make it tough for him. I think AJ will win, but I think Ngannou will make it tough for him, definitely.
I agree with that. I do think Ngannou will make it tough, just purely based off the fact that he is an animal. He will give everything into that fight, and he does have that self-belief. But I think Joshua, as long as he sticks behind that jab, he shouldn't lose the fight. I mean, you say that we haven't got much of a blueprint of Ngannou, but just based off that Fury performance alone, you can see that even just as basic as his jab, it's not anything that's going to cause Joshua too many problems. It's the power shots that he throws in between the jabs that's going to cause him problems. But it's Joshua's job to keep him behind a more educated jab and to prevent that from happening, basically. His range control is going to be massive in this one.
What did you make of the card in general? We had the announcement of, we thought There was murmurs of Zhang fighting Wilder. He's actually now facing Joseph Parker. And then just give us your thoughts on some of the other fights that were on that card.
Yeah, that's a really good heavyweight fight. I do favor Zhang in that fight just because stylistically, with him being so rangy and obviously a southpaw, I think he could walk Parker onto a big shot like he did with Joe Joyce. And this new version of Joseph Parker is really effective against a fighter like Deontay Wilder, but against Zhang, who's got who's just got the ability to take that half step back and land crushing backhand counter on you. I don't think it's going to be as effective in that fight. And obviously, take their two performances against Joe Joyce. Like, it's difficult to ignore that. I mean, you've got one guy who stopped Joe Joyce in the third round in his last fight, and then you've got Joseph Parker, who got stopped by Joe Joyce. And I think it was round eight or nine in that fight.
Yeah.
It's a good fight. I do favor Zhang. And elsewhere on the card, you've got Nick Ball, who's a really good British featherweight. He's fighting, it's his first world title fight for the WBO featherweight strap, and it's against Ray Vargas, who's a real tough customer. I mean, he's coming off a loss against Ashaki Foster, which was in the division above, but he's retained the title in the featherweight division after he beat Mark Magsayo, which was just a great performance. It was a great fight in general. So that's a really tough ask for Nick Ball. But if you don't know about Nick Ball, you should start looking at some of his previous fights, because he's a real exciting contender in that division. He's 5'5", an absolute pit bull of a fighter. I mean, he does CrossFit competitions for fun. When he's not in training camp, he's training for CrossFit competitions, which just shows the character of him, the fact that
Rather
he,
him than me.
well, yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, that man just won't take a day off, and he's so dedicated to fight games. So, I mean, fingers crossed he can do well in that. And another great fight, you've got Gavin Gwyn against Mark Chamberlain, which, I mean, two solid British level fighters. Mark Chamberlain, undefeated prospect who's relatively unproven, and you've got Gavin Gwyn, who's just been around the block. I mean, he lost to Joe Cordino earlier on in his career, but he won that British title, which meant so much to him. Became European champion in a fairly in a fight that he kind of would have expected to go a lot more easier, where he had to come through a bit of adversity there. But yeah, that's a really good matchup. So good card all in all, basically.
Yeah, a lot of good matchups to come, especially with this March card, and then obviously we've got Tyson Fury and Usyk next month. I don't know if you just wanted to touch on the fight we had last week between Better Biev and Smith as well. You touched a little bit on it there, and then that obviously lines up a cracking fight between him and Bivol as well. So.
Yeah, no, that was a destructive performance, but you expect nothing less from Beterbiev at this point. He's now 20 wins, 20 knockouts, the only current champion to have a 100% KO record. And if he's not in your top 10 pound for pound list, then he should be, because he's one of the best pound for pound fighters in the world at the minute. And so is Bivol. So this fight that we're going to see in Saudi Arabia, of course, is going to be two pound for pound great fighters going at it in a division that's absolutely steeped in history, the light heavyweight division. And of course, it's an undisputed fight, so happy days. I mean, you can't get enough of them now. You've got the heavyweight division that's going to be undisputed. You've got the light heavyweight division. You've got Terence Crawford, recently welterweight undisputed champion. Devin Haney did it at a lightweight, so the more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned.
Better be of and Bivol, early predictions go.
I've said it right from the beginning. I picked Bivol in that one, and it's not because of Beterbiev's age or the fact that some people think that he might be on the slide. It's because Bivol is one of the purest boxers you'll ever watch. I mean, in terms of his ring generalship, his ring IQ, his spatial awareness in the ring is something that's really underestimated. In terms of knowing when to get into range and when to get out of range, he uses his movement to such a advantage. And against someone like Poturbiev, he has all the attributes that you need to box rings around him for 12 rounds. I mean, it's going to be hard. It's going to be the hardest fight of his life to avoid those power shots for that duration. But I think he's capable of doing it because, as I say, he's one of the purest boxers out there at the minute.
Yeah, hopefully we get that in sometime later on in 2024. And the thing is, with boxing now, we say, oh, will we get that fight? Well, money's right. The money will be right. So now we can say pretty confidently, like, we will get that fight sometime. So, and then that is the way the Saudis have changed the mindset, some would say. So yeah, that fight and much more boxing fights to come and MMA fights to come, all here, all exclusively. Get our opinions on the Punch and Pod episode 10 now, Oscar. We've reached double figures, and if you want to go check out any of our other previous episodes, go check them out on the Sports Gazette and coming soon on Twitter and Instagram, and we'll have all your latest combat sports news covered across all socials. But for now, we hope you have a great week and we hope you enjoy the fight this weekend. Goodbye.